Okay, good morning. We're just continuing with this idea of the Mishkan Shiloh, and I just gave you a sheet that is from the Hamak Dover, or the Harchev Dover from the Netziv. And just to show the source that was referenced to when we ended the class, that the idea of the Mishkan Shiloh being in the area of Ephraim, the border of Yosef, and why the beautiful fruits were there, and all those things we discussed, and what merit did the Mishkan go to Shiloh, and we talked about the idea of Chesed. So, you got two sheets there. So look at the one that says Kuf Lamed Tes. One says Kuf Lamed Tes. Okay. I still turned it upside down. It didn't work, so I don't know what okay, whatever. We'll figure it out. Anyway, this the Netziv here on Kuf Lamed Tes, it's in Parshas Tetzaveh, and he's talking about the Mizbeach Ketores, the incense offering altar, the altar where the incense offering was brought. And he's asking why is the incense offering described in Parshas Tetzaveh and not in Parshas Truma, where all the other kelim are mentioned. In Parshas Truma, all the utensils of the Mishkan are mentioned: the shulchan, the regular mizbeach, the menorah, the aron, etc. Why? But the mizbeach ketores, the incense offering altar, wasn't mentioned till later. And that's, if you're looking on the lower right-hand side, that's the question. Why has it been delayed, the construction of this altar, after everything else? Belongs in Parshas Truma. So, he brings on a Gemara in Yuma that says the following, right at the bottom underline. It says, the Ketores mechaperas al Lashon Hara. The Ketores came to forgive on the sin of Lashon Hara. Next column, Shu Avon Hachomor Bein Adam LaChavera, which was a very strong Avera between man and his friend. That's in terms of dealing with negative. So now what's in terms of dealing with positive? So therefore, Kach Iker Toeles Ketores, what's the benefit of the Ketores? Lahalo Zichron Shalmasa Gemilas Chasodim. To bring up the memory of the good acts of loving kindness that the Jewish people do. That's the positive aspect of the Ketores, why the Ketores is brought. And then you already can begin to understand. You mean you understand that when the Jewish people were complaining about the manna in Sefer Bamidbar the second time, they got attacked by snakes. And then Aaron had to bring the Ketores, to stop the plague. So obviously, the complaint about the manna that brought about the snake punishment is the snake is the first one who spoke Lashon Hara. It was Lashon Hara. So the Ketores came to bring kapara, atonement, on the Lashon Hara that was spoken. So that's what it does in terms of dealing with negative, but it also should deal with positive things. And the positive aspect is to remind Hashem and to evoke that memory of all any kindness that we do. The Gemilas Chesed Atzma Nimshal LeBesamim. That Gemilas Chesed is comparable to Besamim, which he explained in Sefer Bereishis. Umish, I guess you know that the nice smell and our actions, reflect, a niceness. So that's what he discussed. I didn't have a chance to look it up over there in Bereishis. Umishim Hachi, Ketores hi hamalas zichrona biyichud. Therefore, Ketores is a unique thing to remember. Remind us of this, and look what he brings now. Another Gemara in Yuma, where he brings down Amar Reb Shua ben Broka. Sachli zaken echad. An elder once told me, "Pamachas halachti leShiloh. I once went to Shiloh." Now this is a long time after Shiloh was destroyed. I still could smell the Ketores, between the walls. I only made 8 copies. Wasn't expecting so many people. So I'm sorry. Good share. All right. There should be enough at least to share with people. So he could smell the Ketores between the walls. From the walls, from the broken walls, he could still smell Ketores hundreds and hundreds of years later. Thousands of over 1,000 years later. So he says, "Umamer Tamua." That's a pretty wondrous statement. Lama heriach b'shila yosem Yerushalayim. Why could you smell it there more than Yerushalayim? Shikdir b'yosem yishmona me'ashana u'b'shila hay ela shalosh me'ashana. In Yerushalayim, they burnt the Ketores for 800 years between the two Bata Mikdashim, and Shiloh 360 years. But must be, and here's the point he's trying to make. El b'shvil shiyosod Yerushalayim. What was the foundation of Yerushalayim? What was it built on? Hayah b'kedushas haTorah. Yerushalayim was predicated on the holiness of Torah, kidechsiv kimitzion teitzei Torah. As it says, from Yerushalayim comes forth Torah. Masha'en came b'shila, on the other hand, shila shahayah b'shevet Yosef, which was in the tribe of Yosef, where lohayah me'olam rov Torah. There never was a lot of Torah in Shevet Yosef. At shefil ha'kohanim shebemishkan lo'ayolom dim harbe, to the point where even the kohanim who served and did the avoda in Shiloh did not learn a lot. Kemavur b'brachas, the Gemara b'brachas explains, so yadu d'shchita k'sher b'zor, tells a mice over there, where they didn't even know that shchita was okay with a non-kohen. A non-kohen has a lot of shechta in the base of English. Can't do other parts of the avoda. The kohanim didn't even know that. So they're a bit unlearned. V'chol yesod kedushas mishkan Shiloh amad b'schus k'milas chaset sh'rabba b'shevet Yosef. The whole schus of the Mishkan Shiloh stood on the merit of kindness that was very much prevalent in Shevet Yosef. And he brings a strange Gemara, which I looked up, I still don't understand it. That's what he says. He brings the Gemara in Sanhedrin. It says, Migrav l'Shiloh shlosha milim. The distance from a city called Grav and Shiloh was a distance of 3 kilometers. And the smoke that came from the Pesel Micha, Micha lived in that area, and he had, for all the times during Sefer Shoftim, he had a Pesel, he had an idol, and he worshipped the idol, and smoke came from that idol, and that smoke of the Pesel Micha, it mixed the Imashen Shel Shiloh with the smoke of Shiloh. Ubikshu Malachi Asher Shlitchos. And the Malach HaShoreis wanted to kill him and do all kinds of things. Yatza Baskel, came a Baskel, voiced him and said, no, al titcho, don't do anything. Sheshem gemilas chesed shalach nosos orchem. They do a lot of acts of kindness. So Hashem said, don't do anything to him yet. L'chur tamuat, so he says, it's a wonder. Chibishvul said, nishtava pesel michel mishka shilo. So because of that, now, I don't know what it means. Do we equate the Pesel Michal with the Mishkan Shiloh? In other words, I'm not sure what he's trying to say, but in other words, it seems that the smokes intermingled and there was some parity between the two of them. So he's saying, yeah, El Bolami, the Kivin, the Ikar Askar, Shibishiloh, Gemilz Chasarim, Gamba Pesel Michal. I guess the point he's trying to say is that the main memory of Shiloh was the Gemilz Chesed that happened. And that was also true by Micha, even though he worshipped idols, but they're also involved in kindness as well. Be that as it may, the Ketores evokes a great memory of the great kindness that Jewish people do, and that explains a lot of things. That's why it explains Gemara Yuma, the Ketores Ma'asheres. If a person brings the Ketores, it's a schooler for him to be wealthy. Why? Because we know in the early davening we say mishum dekamo gemilas chesed machalas peres b'mazel umasheres labaleo. We know that gemilas chesed is one of the mitzvos el dvorim that what shadam ochel peresem b'lamazev akaren kemes olam haba. There's certain things we do where the main reward remains for the world to come, and you get the fruits of your mitzvah in this world, and one of them is gemilas chesed. So in other words, when a person does a lot of chesed, the general equation, notwithstanding other factors that could interfere with it, but the general equation is, it brings wealth to those who do chesed, which makes sense. If you do kindness with your wealth, Hashem's got to give you more. That's a very partial thing, right? The more, to the degree that you can't, kindness is done with your wealth, generally speaking. So if you're using your wealth properly, God will give you more. So therefore, very good. So therefore, the guy who brought the Ketores, so kach Ketores habola haskir schusa masheres lamaskir. So the fact we bring the Ketores as a memory to God, to remind him that we're involved in a lot of chesed, so therefore, the guy who does it, the kohen who does that offering and causes that memory, he for sure should be rewarded with wealth. Right? So, and that's why they say, for example, a person who holds the baby during a bris, the tzaddik, he's compared to the kohen who does the ketores offering. Who does the ketores offering? Because it's a beautiful act. It's probably the biggest chesed you could do with a baby is to make him Jewish, right? It's a big chesed. And they say the person who gets the schus of being the tzaddik, it's a skula for wealth as well. That's why you don't give more than one tzaddik per family. In which the custom is, even though you have a zaydi, right? And let's say they have five boys. The zaydi isn't the tzaddik for all five boys. Or whoever. You always give it to somebody else. Why? Not chas v'shalom. We don't want to take away from the zaydi's covet. There's not other covets to give to the zaydi. But this is a big merit. The guy can get wealthy from this. So you spread it around. You give other people opportunities to do this. So, you know, I always say, you should buy a bingo ticket the day you are a tzaddik. You know, maybe it'll give you a good, hasn't worked for me yet, but Mirtz Hashem, will make me rich in other ways. Being rich in other ways, and all of us should be rich in other ways. But anyway, but you see that the whole idea of Shiloh, and the Ketores, and all these things, and that's why Shiloh smelled from that Ketores, and not Kirekach, you see, we know Chazal tells often, that even though Jews do terrible averos, right? In the times of Achav, right? They were terrible idol worshippers. Went to battle, they never lost a person in battle. They never lost a person in battle. David HaMelech, they're big tzaddikim, they lost people in battle. The answer was, in David HaMelech's times, they spoke Lashon Hara. In Achav's times, no matter how bad they were, they didn't speak Lashon Hara. That's the whole point. Why didn't they? They were terrible people. I mean, they were really bad guys, right? And the 10 tribes were really bad guys. Really bad guys. But you know what? They did chesed. So, you know, no matter how bad you are, Hashem can tolerate your idol worship if you're a kind person. And that's interesting what was going on in this Shevet of Menashe, of Ephraim and Menashe, where all this is going on over here. Shevet Yosef, that's where Mishkan Shiloh was. So in spite of the fact that they weren't such great scholars in Talmud, but they still were great in Chesed. And that was very precious to Hashem. And that Ketores would make the whole area smell from this. And since they were involved in Chesed, so this is why they could have all the fruits and they could live in that initial stage. We said with the Mila, as we said yesterday, of Shiloh, was that the Jewish people could even eat the kachim, not in the area of the Mishkan exactly. And they could integrate HaKadosh Baruch Hu in their lives. And why? Because they were unbelievable gemilas chesed people. So therefore, he says, it's on the next page, but I didn't want to bother copying my pages. And that's why it's not connected in the Parsha of Truma, because all the other utensils were connected directly to the Aron, which was Torah. And this was not connected to the Aron, as opposed it was connected to the menorah, which the Aron was Torah Shebal Shebichsav, which was a written law, and the menorah is Torah Shebal Peh, which is the oral law. The oral law needs a lot of time, and to have a lot of time to study Torah, you have to be involved in a lot of chesed to have the wealth to be able to sit and study and learn Torah. So that's how he technically says how the Mizbech Ketores was more connected with the menorah, and didn't do with the Aron, therefore it was in a separate Parsha. Anyway, that's what we see on one side. On the other side, you flip over, he tells you, and indeed you can see where the changes take place. Here he's talking about the bracha that Hashem gives to Ephraim and Menashe. And when Yosef said, Abba, you're making a mistake, you're putting your better bracha for Ephraim and not for Menashe, he says, don't worry, you know what, I know Menashe is going to be okay, but Ephraim's going to be even better, because Yeshua is going to come from him. And it says, "Vizaro Yemoli Goyim," and his children and his descendants will fill all the nations. So if you look right in the middle, I have a little underline next to the word Vizaro, which means Pirish Talmidov, his Talmidim, Afilu Mikol Ashvati, even from all the tribes. And this is a reference to Yehoshua. The Yeshua was a godel in Torah. He was obviously a godel in Torah. He's big in Torah. He's a student of Moshe Rabbeinu. He was godel in Torah. And he taught this to the other tribes, and that means his children. We know anyone who teaches someone Torah, it's as if he gave birth to him. And therefore, there are a lot of Talmid of Yeshua that were able to get Torah from him. So he would be great that a lot of Torah would come from him. But if you look a little bit further down, where I put a little mark on the side there, it says, but Yaakov was particular, v'diktek Yaakov avinu lomar vizaro, and his seed, lohu shehem b'nei Ephraim, but not that it was the b'nei Ephraim itself. This great power that Yeshua had of Torah did not remain with his descendants and his tribe. The power of Torah only remained in Levi and Yehuda. And they were able to give Torah to others, but didn't work with his own tribe, surprisingly. And that's what he brings below in the Harchev Dover, which he explains the Pasuk, what we've mentioned many times already, the Aleph there. That's what it says in Tehillim, spell Yosef, that eventually Hashem was repulsed with the tent of Yosef, ubeshevet Ephraim lo bachar, and the tribe of Ephraim he didn't choose. And then he chose the mountain of Yehuda, of Mount Zion, the tribe of Yehuda of Mount Zion, which he loved. And we're describing the change from Shiloh to Yerushalayim. So he asks, V'yeshlohavim, you have to understand, Ma'u b'shevet Ephraim l'bachar, why add the clause, the tribe of Ephraim he did not choose? Hello b'chlal, shevet Yosef shinemais. It already says that Hashem was disdained the tribe of Yosef. So why do you got to add, and the tribe of Ephraim he didn't choose? I mean, he already disdained Yosef, and Ephraim's included in that. But the pshat is, as he said already, the whole tribe of Yosef, their main sekula, their main charm, came from their kindness and not from their Torah. To the point where the Mishkan Shila that was in the tribe of Yosef, the Kedusha only came out of Gemilas Chesed and not from Torah, as he explained in Sefer Shmos, which we just read. Next line. Zexiv, that's what it means over there. Vayitosh Mishkan Shila Ol Shechein Adam. Hashem took away the Mishkan Shila that had been amongst people. That he says, the Kedusha Salahayi B'midam Yecheres Yisrael. The Kedusha wasn't in a unique way in Yisrael. Vayinu Torah wasn't the normal way of Kedusha coming through Torah. Elo Gemilas Chasadim Am Yecheres Yecholadim Hamayla. The Gemilas Chasadim is something that's unique to any single person. That was their Cholchap. Now that's the first point. That Hashem was, so he says, the Pasuk is saying, Shekodesh Baruch Hu Mas Bel Yosef. He was repulsed by the tribe of Yosef. That's the first clause. Why? So I bekoya kamilas chesed beli Torah linser kedusha sa'uma mitumas avorezara. That kamilas chesed alone without Torah didn't have enough holiness to stave off the tomb of idol worship. Therefore Hashem was repulsed from having the Mishkan being built there. And that was Yosef. Didn't have enough Torah within Yosef. That's why Hashem was repulsed and doesn't keep the Mishkan there. Now the next clause, even Shevet Ephraim, B'yichud, Shohayu od harbe b'no Torah, Mizman Yeshua, that there was a lot of Torah in Ephraim, because that was, Yehuda was from Ephraim. Gambolo Bacher, he didn't even choose them. Why? That's even them he didn't choose. That's what the clause is saying. Why? Because it wasn't destined that the Torah would remain in Shevet Ephraim. It didn't stay with Ephraim, even though it had an initial surge of Torah. And that's why Hashem chose Shevet Yehuda that had Torah. And that's what you have to have. So it comes out from all this that the initial choosing of Shiloh was an amazing thing. Because in the initial time when Shiloh was chosen, not only did they have a lot of chesed. Now, what's the proof? What's proofs that Shevet Yosef had chesed? Well, first of all, they came from Yosef. So Yosef Bechlal is unbelievable chesed. He was the one who supported everybody for so many years. But you have even here. When Moshe was looking for another tribe to join Reuven and Gad on the other side of the Jordan River, right, who came forward? It was Menashe, who comes from Yosef. You know, and that means they'd be separated from the rest of the tribe of Menashe, which wasn't a simple thing. Which was not a simple thing. And they were separated. So that was an unbelievable chesed that came from them. So you see that it was an unbelievable. So at that point, when Yeshua was around, and his koch of Torah, of Ephraim, was incredible, because he was the giver of he was the next link of Torah. So at that point, when he was alive, the Torah was amazing. They were unbelievable in chesed. So these two aspects together, we have a lot of Torah, a lot of chesed, gives you an ability to have a mishkan that you could live with in your own personal life. That even while you're a farmer, you can still eat kachim al taharas hakodesh, and you can eat it with the best thoughts and with the best kavanas. And that made the mishkan Shiloh, you know, it was a temporary, remember we said it was not exactly a house, not exactly a tent, it was in between, it was an in-between stage. But it appears it was like a glorious time, an unbelievable time that Klal Yisrael was at, albeit not so long. Even though Shiloh was 369 years, the glory wasn't for all 369 years, obviously. But clearly when Yeshua set it up, and at least in these 14 years that Yeshua lived, and maybe a little bit beyond, right, where it was under Yeshua's leadership, Shiloh was an amazing place. It was an amazing place where you could eat kachim not in Shiloh, at a distance from Shiloh. You could integrate spirituality into your regular life. It was because they had these tremendous attributes going hand in hand together, which was very unique. It's very unique that one Shevet could have both Torah and Gemilas Chesed, like championing that. We see it doesn't last that long, and when it finally comes to Yerushalayim, we only have the power of Torah, which is very powerful as well. But it's limited. It's limited only within the walls of Yerushalayim. It can't go beyond the walls of Yerushalayim. When Mashiach comes, the walls will go down. We know the walls will go down, and the effect of Beis Hamikdash will be throughout Eretz Yisrael. Because then there'll be kindness. You'll have a synthesis of all that. So you see that this Shiloh. I'm belaboring this because kind of nobody knows anything about Shiloh. Anything about Shiloh, and it was an unbelievable place. It was an unbelievable place of kedusha for Eretz Yisrael. And for the Jewish people at that time. And now, you know, the government just wants to give it away. And that's all. They couldn't care less if we had such a place. Right? But it was a temporary, unbelievable stage that, you know, unfortunately we couldn't maintain it, for longer than it was. Yeah.
This is a very nice piece about the Shabbat and the different characteristics and everything. Yeah. Yesterday, contradicts what seemed to what we learned yesterday in that Mizbeach was not in. Was not in Yehuda.
Okay. So you're saying it's a contradiction that the Mizbech was in Binyamin. True. Okay. It's not a contradiction. It's there's different aspects within it. You know, essentially it really was surrounded by Shevet Ephraim. It was surrounded by all sides by Shevet Ephraim. That's the reality. Even though you wedge in a little bit of a finger into it, it was surrounded by it, and the Sanhedrin was in Ephraim, and the fact that you know for whatever reasons Hashem had to allow Binyamin because he was there are overriding factors that impinged on all this. Binyamin had to have the kedusha. Why? Because he is the ultimate of Shalom. He was the ultimate of Shalom. He never bowed down to Esav. He didn't sell Yosef. And for those reasons, Hashem said that part has to always be there. That's always Binyamin's. Can't move out of that. Binyamin was never tainted. Okay, but the fact that he didn't have other parts, You know, but you see, at the end of the day, who's going to make it happen? Now you have the little avoid over here. You have the core of the kedusha, but then it's got to be implemented. You know, even though you bring the karbanis and all that is wonderful, but if you don't have a Sanhedrin, at the end of the day, who implements all the kedusha that's in the world? It's got to be implemented by Yehuda, right? Maisi needed Yehuda. Yehuda and the Torah that they had and the leadership that they had. You know, it's wonderful to have kedusha, but you got to implement it amongst the people. And that's why the Sanhedrin was in Yehuda. And that's why we look at the Beis HaMikdash, always it's in Sheva Yehuda. Binyamin gets the kedusha part. Essentially, Binyamin never sinned. So he's got to get credit for that. He never made a mistake. And he has an essential holiness within himself. He's the passive holy one. Binyamin, you find him as a passive guy. He never does anything. Doesn't do any avers. Didn't do anything great either. He's a tzaddik, but, you know, he's very passive. So, okay, you could do karbanos, because that's a passive thing. You surrender before Hashem, that's a passive thing. He has within himself that quality of passivity to surrender before Hashem, and that's what the Beis HaMikdash is all about. Good. But now how do we translate that wonderful passivity and bring that kedusha beyond? You know, strangers are coming. People from all the Shvatim are coming. How are we going to integrate that into their lives? Well, yeah, you need the Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin's the other Shevet. Ephraim, we said Tana Shiloh was probably that other part of Shiloh was in Ephraim. There's the implementation. How well everybody comes to visit, who are they going to behandle with? They're going to behandle with the main place where the tribe is. If it's going to be Yehuda for Yerushalayim, or it's going to be Ephraim for Shiloh. So there is a partnership that is required. You see, it's required. Okay. There must be deeper stuff. Okay.
The same way that the Binyamin was a finger into Ephraim, Yehuda was a finger into Binyamin.
Right.
So when he went to Yerushalayim,
but it's like right at the border.
You were actually going through Binyamin. They were the main.
I don't know. It was only a little bit. I mean, it was mamish. It's not like a finger all the way up. Like by Ephraim, Binyamin and Ephraim, like Binyamin's going way out of his space. By Binyamin and Yehuda, they're mamish contiguous. It's mamish contiguous. No, it's the border split right into it. Split right into it. And really, more of, you know, Yerushalayim was a lot of Yehuda. It was a lot more of Yehuda, really, because it was the other part of Yerushalayim was Yehuda. So it was more Yehuda, just a little bit of Binyamin at his edge, brought into the Kachik Kadashim, but not more. Most of Yerushalayim was Yehuda.
One more question.
Yeah, okay.
Whatever happened with Shimon?
Shimon, what happened with Shimon? Okay, I was really going to skip that, but we'll just mention briefly. Shimon, he had his cities were within Yehuda's borders. Was within Yehuda's borders. You find something very unique with Shimon and Levi. Levi does not have his own tribal portion, but what does he have? He has the Ore Miklot. He has the Levite cities that are cities of refuge, 48 of them, spread out through Eretz Yisrael. That's Levi. Shimon has what? Has cities sprinkled within Shevet Yehuda. Why? So this is, can I have the Chumash please? This is the fulfillment of the Bracha that Yaakov gave to Shimon and Levi. We see in Parshas V'yechi, as they came for their brachos, Shimon v'Levi, Achim, their brothers, cohorts, Klei Chamas v'Cheresem, their weaponry is a stolen craft, B'sodom al Tava Nafshi, I don't want to be involved in their secrets, B'kolom al Techat Kvodi, I don't want my honor in their congregation, etc., etc. He says, cursed is their anger because it's strong, and their rage and their wrath is harsh. And then he says, Achal came b'Yaakov. I will separate them within Yaakov. V'afitzeim b'Yisrael. I will disperse them in Israel. Meaning to say, when you put Shimon and Levi together, that's, you know, it's like mamish. One is a catalyst on the other. You know, they were the ones who were instrumental in the sale of Yosef. They're the ones who killed out the city of Shechem. They're impetuous. They just do what they want. The two of them together, like you have in any school, if you have one troublemaker, it's not a problem. One troublemaker is never a problem. Two is when it's a problem. That's when the teacher can't, you know, then they're combining their talents, and then you have all kinds of problems. One is never a problem. You separate one guy from the class, he's in the corner, you've neutralized him. When you got two, it's a problem. So these two were just unbelievable. It's like fire and oil. You know, it just, whew. So he said, you know what? These guys got to be separated from each other. Not only separated, but even from themselves, they have to be separated. So you divide the Levites into 48 different parts. So you never have too many Levites in one place. Shimon, you have a bunch of cities scattered in Yehuda. Yehuda, which is the Malchus, will keep them in line. So they're scattered there, so they never raise their ugly heads to make problems. So that's why they kind of, they have portions of land, but not contiguous with each other, so that they could ever be, and that you find they're never a force. Shimon is never a force for that reason. And Levi, you know, Baruch Hashem, was turned into the better way, where they were at least able to use their power in service. As long as they were separated from Shimon, they couldn't use that power in a negative way. So that's why they kind of, you don't notice. You don't notice on the map. They're not there. So you see that, you know, when you do certain behaviors, it affects your children. They have to live with those realities. Okay. Good. Got all the questions answered, Michael? Good.
I'm done.
Good. Baruch Hashem. Now let's do just two more psukim over here. Back to Perek Yud Ches. Let's go over Pasuk Aleph again and Beis and Gimel. At least get these three psukim clear to understand what's happening. Because then really we're going to skip a while, because Yud Ches and Yud Tes, you'll see, is just the apportionment of this next seven tribes. The next thing we're going to look at is Perek Chaf. The next time is the Ir HaMiklots is coming up. So let's look again. Aleph. Ayikalu kol adas b'nei Yisrael shilo. So he gathered all the Jewish people in Shiloh. And there they set up the Ohel Moed. Now here's the line that needs more explanation now. And the land was conquered before them. One of the questions that has to be asked is he congregates the entire Jewish people in Shiloh. Right? And the question is, why did he erect the Mishkan and Shiloh with only five tribes with portions and not the other seven tribes? So that already could be answered, as we discussed earlier, that there's different psukim that describe when the holiness is brought down. And in one of the psukim it says, Ba'achat Shvatach, in one of your tribes, and the other one says, amongst your tribes. And they say that Shiloh is the one that's inferred from one of your tribes. So we really don't need all the tribe involvement in having land yet. So in other words, as soon as the area of Shiloh was there, and we conquered it, so let's build it already. Why wait? And it was, you already gave Ephraim and Manasseh had their portion. So they gave it to them. Although it's a little bit, there is a little difficulty in that shot. And it needs further resolution, because we just said, according to the tradition, it was in Binyamin as well. And Binyamin doesn't get his portion until right after this. He's the next one who gets portion. So they didn't really have Binyamin yet. So you're going to have to say, you know, the part of Tana Shiloh, the other parts of Shiloh, you know, maybe a little bit of Binyamin, even though they didn't get his portion yet because it was connected and was well within Ephraim. But that's why they started. It was ready to go. You have the land. Let's get going. But now the question is, what's this three words, Va'aretz Nich B'Shalifneim, what's that doing over here, that the land was conquered? What's the connection between putting up the Ohel Moed in Shiloh and the fact to say that the land was conquered, number one? And number two, the truth is, the land was not yet fully conquered. So what's the connection? And it doesn't seem to be a true statement. So Rashi says the following. He says the connection is as such. Once the Mishkan went up, it now was easier for the land to be conquered. The rest of the land would be easier to be conquered. And it says, Va'aretz nich b'shalifneim, the land was conquered. In other words, it was going to be so much easier as if it was already conquered. That's what I'm saying. That's the way Rashi learns it. He's saying, Mishenik v'mishkan, ha'aretz noicha likavish lifneim. It would be easier to conquer. And then it's as if it was conquered already. And that's how Matsudas explains this. And therefore, we can understand the next couple of psukim based on that. And this really explains another thing. What did we end off in Perek Yud Zayin? What was the story we ended off last week with? That the fact that the B'nai Menashe were having trouble conquering their land. Remember, B'nai Menashe said, we don't have enough land. And they said, well, what's the problem? Go cut up trees in the forest and this and that. I said, well, no, it's not going to work. Got all kinds of people. So, especially according to the Malbim, who says, okay, then Hashem gave them, either way, even like the Malbim, or like, not like the Malbim. They had certain cities, and it says that the Jewish people, that Menashe couldn't drive them out. They couldn't drive them out. So it was a problem. So this I think is an interesting point, and this kind of connects these ideas. You don't really find any problems with conquering until Perek Yud Zayin. Until then, it seemed to work. Okay, he had a little problem with Kalev and Dvir, couldn't do that. So he said, well, whoever can conquer it, I'll give my daughter. So Asniel did conquer it. He did conquer it. So that worked out. But now you're seeing the first time that Hashemet really tried and couldn't conquer. So that's a problem. So therefore, maybe this is also why he's doing the Mishkan Shiloh now and not waiting for all 12. Because when the Mishkan will be up, it will be easier to conquer the rest of the land. So he's seeing, Yeshua's seeing, Menashe's already having trouble conquering, and these guys shouldn't have so much trouble conquering. They got a lot of people, they got strength, they got this, they got that. They still weren't able to conquer it. So Yeshua is seeing that it's not working. So now we're gonna put up the Mishkan, and it'll be easier for people to conquer. Now why will it be easier, you're asking? So we're gonna have to look at the next two psukim to see how that's going to happen. And it will explain the next Tupsukim. Let's look in Pasuk Beis. So what was left over for the Jewish people that did not yet get their inheritance was seven tribes. There's problems with that Pasukim. We'll come back to that. Yeshua said to Jewish people, how long are you guys slacking off to conquer the land? Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? He notices that they're slacking off and conquering the land, you know. Kind of maybe they're taking the lead from him. Remember, he delayed it, right? And now, so it's coming back on him, right? You're delaying kind of the land. As far as Asher Nasan Lachem Hashem Elokei Avosechem, that Hashem your Lord gave you. So what's going on over here? So it appears that the seven tribes were slacking off in conquering the land. Why? Because what was going on? Because really every tribe, they didn't want to fight themselves for their portion. But they were hoping that everybody would come together and help with the conquest. But it just wasn't happening. Like everybody's sitting around waiting for one tribe to help, you know. What happened until then? What's interesting, until the last couple of prakim, it was all the Jews came and conquered every spot. They all came together and conquered this one, conquered that one, conquered that one. Then they begin to see with Kalei close, they say, I want to do it myself. He took on Chevron himself. He wanted to take on Dvir. He already gave out to Menashe. Menashe's going themselves up. He's not going. It seems that when they were going on their own, it's like it wasn't working. And now all the seven tribes are sitting around and they're going, you know, I don't know if I could do this by myself. And they're kind of waiting. And the truth is, they didn't even want to divide up the land because they kind of were saying, you know, let's just wait till we just conquer everything and then we'll divide up the land. So episode wasn't going. So Yeshua says, listen, you know what? I'm going to put the Olmoid up. And once the Olmoid's up and the Shekhinah has a more pronounced effect upon us, you know, then it's going to be easier for you guys to conquer. And now you guys can separate and do it on your own. And that's what he was trying to encourage them. They seem to be saying, let's just keep working together and doing it together. And for whatever reasons, it's hard to understand why Yeshua did not do that. For whatever reason, he didn't have, you know, they keep on conquering. Maybe he felt that if they were conquering together, nobody would give it their best effort because they didn't know it was their land. Maybe he felt if you knew it was your land, you're going to put more effort into conquering it. Whatever it may be. But people were just afraid to move on. And I think they were afraid, especially after they saw that Menashe was not successful in their conquest. It says later Menashe got stronger. Later, after the Mishkan went up. So therefore, it comes out that this Mishkan being up brought a lot more Kedusha into Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, now that the Shekhinah has a place to rest, Because during these 14 years, remember, the Aron was out of the Mishkan. And in general, there was a lack of unity because of this. Remember, as long as the Ark was not in the Mishkan together, bamos were allowed. Private altars were allowed. During these 14 years, private offerings were allowed. You didn't have to go to the Mishkan. So only after Shiloh was erected, now private bamos were not allowed. Once private bamos weren't allowed, so everybody had to come to Mishkan Shiloh. And that brought a new aspect of unity amongst the Jewish people. Once there was a new aspect of unity amongst the Jewish people, and you'll see other verses will substantiate this point, is now people will be more successful. In other words, it seems that during these 14 years, and after they were no longer fighting as groups, and they're fighting as individuals, everybody kind of felt, we can't do it on our own. They just felt they couldn't do it on their own, because they were so used to doing it as a group. Ephraim tries to do it, he can't do it on his own. Menashe can't do it on his own. So he brings them all together. This is probably the first time, you know, in a few years, in about 7 years. It's already the 14th year now. So for 7 years, like, it's still a mystery exactly what was going on in these 7 years. So much was conquered, and like, what were they doing for 7 years? Things weren't yet distributed. It was mudna, what was going on over here. But everyone's just sitting around, and it wasn't making it happen. He says, let's all get together in Shiloh, and now there's no more private business over here. You want to come, you bring a korban, it has to be done together, we're one unit. And now as you go, you should feel the strength of all of Klal Yisrael with you. In other words, when a Jew, the whole point is such an important idea, you know, this whole idea of splintering our service to Hashem, you know, you go to this shtibble, go to that shtibble, go to this place, without having one central place where everybody gets together. You don't feel the same strength of numbers even when you go alone to what you're doing. You know, when you go to shul and you see 500 people and you feel you're part of a chevra and you're part of a group, even when you're alone, you feel power. You feel you're not doing this on your own, even when you're doing things on your own. But that strength of the group that you were with, it carries with you. So that's what was going on. When they came together in Shiloh, and I says, okay, this is the central place, guys. This is our focal point. We all get together over here. Remember, we're all one big group. So now when you go out for your private battles, you'll feel the strength of that group. Then it became easier to conquer. That's why Menashe couldn't conquer, because they did not have yet Mishkan Shiloh. Only later was it easier to conquer. And that's why at this point say, listen, things are delaying so long. What's going to be? We're never going to get this land. Everyone's afraid to go to fight. So what am I going to do? So let them have given out all the portions and then build the Mishkan Shiloh. No, because they're not ready to take their portions. So therefore, only after building the Mishkan Shiloh and they feel united, now they can go separately on their ways with the strength of being part of the group and then be able to conquer the land, which happened after they built the Mishkan Shiloh. So you see, the point being, a lot of us have a lot of Yetzirahs to conquer. We all have our own little tribal portion to conquer. So to the degree that we don't live in our private bumos world, and you know, the shul does something, I don't have to go, I do everything on my own, I go to this place, go to that place, I'm my own guy. I go to this shul for mincha, that shul for marav, this shul for that class, this shul for this, this for that, and where do you belong? I belong everywhere. Everywhere but nowhere. Then you know what? You never really conquer your own little Yetzirahs. Because you know what? You don't have a rabbi, you don't have anybody to talk to, no one can give you mussar because you don't stay in any place very long. You know, you go to this place, it gives me this, gives me that, gives me that, but nobody really is on top of me. And people like it that way. So you know what? You're never going to conquer your Yetzirahs. When you have a Mishkan Shiloh, even though it's not your Shalim, but we're all the place we get together, you're part of a Chevra. The Chevra has a dynamic. The Chevra has a level of expectancy. The group demands certain behavior. You have to live up to being part of that group. And people notice when you're not in shul, because you can't say, I went to the other shtiebel. This is the only place you go. So there's a certain pressure. You know, it's great. You daven in five shuls. The rabbi never sees you. None of them in all five, because you tell me you went to the other place. It's a good trick. Well, you know, but if this is the only place, you're not there, you know, what's going on with you? So, I gotta go. I gotta improve. So that is a positive pressure. When you're with a group. So when they had the Mishkan Shiloh, then they could live up and conquer their battles. So we should all be zocha to hear that point and want to be more focused as a group. That's what Purim's all about. To get together and have achdus, then you'll see you'll be able to win your personal battles that you have to fight as well. Mishkan Shiloh be zocha to accomplish that.